Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I want to tell you my secret now. I see death.
Silent train is people!
No. I am the father of all.
What's in the box?
You did it! You blew it up! Damn you all!
Hello and welcome to Slate's Spoiler Specials. I'm Karen Hahn, staff writer at Slate, and I'm joined by Matt Desim, Browbeat's Nights and Weekends editor. Welcome, Matt.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Now that I've said it, I almost feel like I should have had more of like a fighter intro. I haven't played any of the Mortal Kombat games, but I know like whenever you select a fighter on screen, it's like Matt Desim or something like that.
Yeah, there are a lot of gongs and, timpanis.
We're here to spoil the new Mortal Kombat movie directed by Simon McQuoid, and it's on HBO Max right now, so you can go watch it. You can also see it in theaters if you can manage to do that safely and you are comfortable with going to a theater currently. I guess before we jump into it, are you a big Mortal Kombat head? I've just said I've never played any of the games, so I'm obviously not, but...
I am not. If you ask me, like, 25 years ago, well, longer than that now, but the original game, like the arcade console, the first one, I was obsessed with in high school, specifically the one at Sir Gooney's Golf and Games in Farragut, Tennessee. there's still, half of my college tuition in that thing. Since then, though, I haven't played any console versions.
That's fair.
So there's a lot of characters in this movie I hadn't met before.
So this is the third Mortal Kombat movie, and as far as I can tell, as someone who has only seen clips of the other two Mortal Kombat movies, the most successful of the three. I have a review currently up on Slate.com in which I said that I really liked the movie. Matt, what's did you enjoy it? Did you hate it?
Yeah, I read your review, which is great. I more or less agree with it, I would say. It delivers exactly what it promises and nothing else, and... if that's what you're looking for, this is with the Lincoln quote or whatever, if you're the kind of person who likes that sort of thing. And I do, in most cases. So I did like that one. I have never seen the second Mortal Kombat film, but I saw the original. Or that, there are TV series too, apparently.
I did not know that. I mean, obviously my knowledge of Mortal Kombat lore is obviously not up to snuff.
Well, I think it's one of those things where like the less of the lore you know and the less of the lore the filmmakers know, the better, because it's so ridiculous that the more you... engage with it, the sillier everything gets.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the overall thing with the movie, where it begins and there's immediately a title card that's like, that introduces the concepts of Outworld and Earthrealm, which on their own are ridiculous words, just generally, and even more so when you think like, these are the regions competing in a tournament known as Mortal Kombat with a K, which is never explained in the movie.
Well, you can't copyright Mortal Kombat with a C, they discovered when they were making the video game.
Wait, is that true?
That's the entire reason.
Wow, I had no idea. Yeah. All right, so let's get into spoiling it. So it begins with a flashback in 17th century Japan. We see the renowned ninja Hanzo Hasashi, played by Hiroyuki Sanada, and his family beset upon by an assassin named Bihan, who is part of the Lin Kuei assassin clan. There's some beef there that is never really explained, but all we need to know for the movie is that Bihan kills Hanzo's wife and one of his children and also leaves Hanzo for dead. And the child that survives ends up being an ancestor for the main character of the film, Cole Young, played by Louis Tan, who is a new character made up for this movie. So do you want to set up what's going on with Outworld and Earthrealm? Because we mentioned that, but I guess not necessarily what's going on.
I can set it up exactly as well as the movie does, because I thought that was so ridiculous I transcribed it. So here's the Mortal Kombat lore that you have to know. Earthrealm is on the verge of catastrophe. Should it lose one more tournament, the savage realm of Outworld will invade. But an ancient prophecy foretells that a new group of champions will be united by the rise of Hanzo Hasashi's blood. That's all you got to know.
So Earth's champions are all marked by, they have like the, if you're familiar with the Mortal Kombat like logo, it's a circle with a dragon head inside it. All of Earth's champions have that somewhere on their body. The difference being that Cole Young was born with it as one of Hanzo Hisashi's descendants, and everyone else that he meets who is an Earth champion has basically won it in combat from somebody else by proving themselves worthy. So almost immediately just launches straight into another fight after introducing Cole Young, who's basically now like kind of a dirtbag boxer after being a former MMA champion. So he meets Sub-Zero again. Bi-Han has become Sub-Zero because he has ice powers now.
Right. We see him get his ass kicked in a fight. And in the locker room afterwards, this Jax, played by Mecca Brooks, shows up and asks him about the fight and or just tries to strike up conversation. Cole isn't interested. And then after the fight, he's having burgers. And then suddenly it just starts snowing in the middle of July. He's out with his family at like a burger stand. And Sub-Zero is here. I don't know if he's trying to kill Jax or he's trying to kill Cole because, you know, spoiler alert, they're both chosen ones or whatever. But there's this giant ice fight outside of a burger joint in some, you know, small town locale, unidentified small town.
Yeah. I will say it's a pretty cool scene. Like, one of the highlights of the movie is just the fact that everyone has these kind of crazy powers and the way that the movie shows them off. Sub-Zero can just make everything into ice and snow. And as soon as it starts snowing, you're like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what's going to happen. Sub-Zero is going to show up. And then for fans of the game who are familiar with what Jax's situation is, you also immediately like, oh, yeah, I can't wait for his arms to get frozen off, because he shows up with both arms intact. His whole thing is that he has metal arms, which is part of the trailer, so it's not a huge spoiler. But Sub-Zero does a Snowpiercer on him, freezes his arms, and then just cracks him off.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty cool. Yeah, no, when Jax shows up for the first time, and they're just a bunch of glamour shots of the guy's arms, too. Like, he's always posed, like, flexing his arms and, you know, whatever. It's just like, that's not good.
It would be a real pity if something happened to them.
Yeah, well, no, it's like meeting the Hisashi family or whatever in the opening. Like, anytime you see somebody who's having a good time or has something good in the first third of the movie, look out.
So Jax mentions to Cole before he gets blasted that he's working with someone named Sonya Blade, and gives him her address. Part of the funny part of this movie is that Cole pretty much takes this on stride. He's like, yeah, okay, I'll go find Sonya Blade. And then later, when it's like Mortal Kombat is a thing, people can shoot fireballs, he's like, okay, sure.
Which, yeah, these are very flexible people. There's not a lot of, like, let's question the reality of this thing.
Yeah, in fairness, I almost think that makes it better. Like, I feel like the version of the movie where he's like, what? Oh, my God. Like, I can't believe this is happening is almost, like, more boring.
Yeah, no, you don't have a choice with that. Like, I think with this kind of story where the lore and the backstory is just, you know, it's not poisonous, but the more you engage with it, the sillier your movie is going to get. You have to just, you do what I think they did here, which is you take one character and you make that sort of the Han Solo figure, and that's the person who gets to be skeptical. And in this case, that's Kano, who we meet shortly after this. So Cole like flees this fight, and Sub-Zero and Jax fight, and Jax gets killed presumably. And then they go back, and he goes off to find Sonya Blade, in Gary, Indiana. He drops off his family at home and goes out there. And then, after he meets her in this like junkyard for boats where she lives, just a lot of random industrial decay in this movie too. Earth Realm is on the verge of catastrophe,
and not because of Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, no, there's a lot going wrong here long before that. I mean, they're at a burger stand; they're eating beef. But yeah, so when Cole arrives in Gary, Indiana, meets Sonya, they're sort of introduced, and they discover that she is keeping this guy like chained to a chair in her house. Kano, played by Josh Lawson, is sort of the locus of the audience's skepticism. And he is a mercenary who also has one of these champion marks. He has it because he slit the throat of a champion that, you know, had it before him, who Sonya Blade was tracking. And at that point, Sonya captured him and has him chained up there.
Kano, kind of the comic relief of the movie, which I think half works and half doesn't. Josh Lawson, like, is funny enough to carry a lot of it, but perhaps because of, I have no real perception of Kano as a character beyond this movie, again, as someone who's not familiar with the franchise, but a lot of the jokes that he's making are a little misogynistic or racist, I would say, generously.
Oh, yeah, no, he's an asshole. That's very true of the first movie as well, is that they don't, if you're supposed to dislike a character, that's pretty clearly and obviously telegraphed.
Right. Like, he's not a hero of the movie, to be clear.
No, he's not. Well, and he's all, like, in the video games, he's part of the team of bad guys, I think, canonically. And in the first one, he is he's just a bad guy. He's part of it. He's already teamed up with Outworld. Mm-hmm. But when we meet him here, he's hanging out with these guys, albeit as their prisoner. And well, we should talk about what the ultimate plan of the villains here is, that Earthrealm and Outworld are supposed to compete in these tournaments to determine who controls what realms or whatever. But Shang Tsung, who is the leader of Outworld, doesn't want to do it anymore. So he is planning to kill all of Earthworld's champions before the tournament can even happen. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, and he will then win because no one will be able to fight him. So that is why he'd sent Sub-Zero out. Sub-Zero was trying, and that's why Sub-Zero killed Jax or tried to kill Jax. Mm-hmm. So that having not stopped Cole, they sent another guy, Reptile, who's also from the video games. But in this case, he's like an actual just reptile guy almost. In the games, he's just sort of like this green ninja. But in this case, he's this CGI reptile, invisible reptile monster that they send after Cole. They sent to Sonya's house.
I actually had no idea that he was an actual character. I just thought that he was some goons that they'd made up for this because his presence is so negligible here.
Well, so the thing about Mortal Kombat is that in the first video game, of course, they've got no memory or anything to work with. So like half the characters are just the same as another character, except the color of their outfit is different because they could swap. And that's Reptile. That was him. He was like, he's Sub-Zero, Scorpion, and Reptile are like the blue, yellow, green ninja with all the same animations, different powers, but like clearly the same thing. So I guess somebody was like, yeah, we can't have three of these identical looking guys in the movie. And they reimagined him.
Yeah.
So yeah, so this invisible reptile attacks while Sonya and Cole are talking. And in that fight, Kano manages to get free and is actually the guy who kills the reptile. It's invisible. Kano is smart enough to jam like a road flare in its back with a knife, at which point they can see it, and then slices the hell out of it, and then does one of his sort of signature Kano fatalities from the video game by reaching into the thing's chest and ripping out its heart. And
then, Kano wins.
Exactly. There are like 30 different times in this movie, some character will duplicate the announcers from the video.
And every time I cheered. I thought it was incredible. Every time yes.
It's great. It's great. It's like, all you can do here is test your might. All they had to do is they were missing the part where they look at the camera and wink before they say it. But yeah. there's a lot of that. And it's pretty satisfying, I got to say. Like that, yeah. I got a huge kick out of Kano doing the heart rip move.
As a quick aside, speaking of Test Your Might, I must mention that Matt wrote a very, very good piece for us on Slate.com interviewing the guy who does the yell.
Yeah, Kyle Wyatt. Yeah, thank you. Really, really nice guy. Just was sort of an extra in a commercial at the right time in history to end up being the guy who yells Mortal Kombat, which he nailed.
Yeah.
I would say.
Iconic part of all cultural history at this point.
Exactly.
So, right. They manage to kill Reptile and then travel to Raiden's temple. So Raiden is the guardian of Earthworld in the same way that Shang Tsung is the guardian, I guess, of... Oh, no, sorry. Earthrealm and Outworld. Earthrealm,
yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Can't get those wrong.
No, they'll send you to Outworld.
So Raiden already has two of the champions with him, Liu Kang and Kung Lao, and they're sort of skeptical of the new champions, but take them under their wing to start trying to train them, with the exception of Sonya, who they're like, you don't have a champion mark, so you can't really train with us, which will become a plot point later, obviously.
Yeah, this is one place where I thought this movie was like demonstrably worse than the first one, because in the first one, Raiden's temple is shot on location in Thailand, and there's just a lot of... very bad color timing, 90s stuff done to it, but just like a lot of beautiful scenery. But in this case, they go to like the middle of nowhere, and then the temple is primarily underground and entirely, you know, CGI and painted styrofoam or whatever. It's not a...
Yeah, it's pretty cheesy.
Yeah. There's nothing in the original Mortal Kombat that isn't cheesy, including that. But I was a little disappointed when they got there. I was like, oh man, I thought we were going to get some nice location shoots at least. Mm-hmm. But no such luck. So once they arrive at the temple, we're sort of through the first act of it, and then begins the training.
Yeah, and we should mention that Jax is also there. He has metal arms now, but they are bad metal arms. He does not like them. They look bad, and he's having trouble getting used to them as he tries to train with the rest of them. So Liu Kang and Kung Lao already have kind of superpowers that they use. Liu Kang can shoot fireballs, and Kung Lao has a giant circular hat that he can throw around, kind of like Captain America's shield. And those powers are called their Arcana. And the idea now is that during this training session, Kano, Cole, and Jax will hopefully have their Arcana awakened because of how intense and cool the training is. it does not work really well, except for with Kano, who gets so angry during an argument that he shoots a laser out of one of his eyes, which I do feel like is a relatable feeling for most of us.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been there.
Yeah.
But he doesn't learn that in the Fight Club. He learns that, like, over dinner or whatever. Mm-hmm, like, the training is just a disaster. You know, Cole gets sliced up, and that has the best joke in the series, actually, I think. When Liu Kang fights Kano, because he just keeps doing leg sweeps.
Yeah,
and knocking him over, which is like the classic, I don't really know how to play Mortal Kombat, but I'm going to be really annoying to my opponent's strategy. You just keep doing that kick.
And they literally pointed out, right? Because Kano's like, do you like only know that one move?
Exactly. Well, and they also did the thing, like on the third try, Kano does the thing that you try to do to avoid it, which is you try to jump over the leg sweep. And he just does this stupid little hop, which is what you do in the video game, but times it wrong and gets knocked over anyway. It's pretty rare that a video game movie will actually engage with the experience of what it's like to play the video game. And I really like that moment because they did that.
I think that's definitely the most kind of direct translation of the gameplay aspect, at least. Like, there is a bit where Liu Kang does his signature, like, air kicks, but it's not showcased in the same way, I would say. Yeah.
No. Like, well, there's a point, I think, in one of the fights where I don't remember who does it, but somebody does that Johnny Cage, you know, punch to the balls thing. That's his signature move, but it's not Cage. The thing in the video game, of course, was anytime you pull that move off, the other character would scream in pain in a high-pitched voice, and they didn't go that far, but they did. There were a lot of people mimicking, you know, the exact moves of various Mortal Kombat characters in this.
Which is cool to see. So as training is going so badly, Shang Tsung once again tries to do something devious and shows up at the temple with Sub-Zero and a new character named Mylene. Well, new as in we haven't seen her in the movie yet, but not new to the franchise, named Mylena.
Yeah, well, that's but first what happens is Shang Tsung shows up at the temple with his new assassins, with his new team of assassins, but Raiden erects a shield. It doesn't work, but the reason it doesn't work is because Kano switches sides. He has some kind of past with one of Shang Tsung's assassins, this guy named Cabal, who looks like a Fallout 3 character.
Yeah.
He's got, like, power armor on.
He's just the game cover, yeah.
Yeah, but those two make a deal whereby Kano joins their team and takes down the shield, and then they all show up, and then we get the first kind of, round of fights, and that's Cole versus Goro, Jax versus Reiko, Sonya versus Mylena, Liu Kang versus Cabal. And Reiko is just this big, tall guy with a hammer. Mylena has these just gigantic jaws. I think in the video game, she's a part of some genetic experiment or other. I don't know. Anyway, she's monstrous. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Mylena kicks Sonya's ass, doesn't kill her because she realizes that she's not one of the chosen ones, which leaves Kano to try to do that. And he drops like a statue on her head, uses lasers to cut off a statue, and then and then Kung Lao fights Natara, who is this flying like vampire thing, and that's another one of those things where they reproduce it, you know, perfectly, a video game fatality. They do the one where it was great because they didn't try to do it in any more, like, it's exactly as cheesy and not accurate to human anatomy as the video game, you know.
It was also like, yeah, they hyped Natara up so much because she's introduced shortly beforehand, where Shang Tsung's like, here's my newest fighter, isn't she beautiful?
Yeah. Beautiful,
and then
but
she
deadly.
Just immediately gets wiped out because Kung Lao throws his hat, it turns into basically a circular saw, he throws her onto it, she gets vivisected, and then obviously he says flawless victory, which is amazing.
Yeah, she doesn't lay a finger on him. He just slices her right in half.
Yeah.
That, and then that was also, that was a good moment. Those moments where they just, usually I'm like not a fan of, you know, too much fan service or whatever, but this movie I thought did that part at least very, very well. I found those satisfying, and I haven't played those video games since, you know, I don't know, 25, 30 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, so while this is going on, we're also intercutting to a fight back at Cole's house because he has been sent back there because he failed to find his Arcana, right? And has given up on him. And that is where Prince Goro shows up, and he's that six limbs and four arms is the Prince Goro recipe. and they have this just probably one of the worst fights in the movie, I would say.
It's not great.
Yeah, Goro's just this. I mean, Goro's CGI, and it's as good as you could do a fight between a character that's not
exactly
there, I think.
Yeah, like all the fights between people are great, especially because I think a lot of the cast are doing at least most of their own stunts. But when you're fighting basically a CGI creature that's not really there, you can kind of, the weight just kind of disappears from the fight.
Right. But what happens is Cole actually, over the course of this fight, discovers his arcana, which is some sort of bizarre, it's like armor that absorbs blows and then lets him punch back with them or something, it looks like. It's not really clear how it works, but his entire upper body gets encased in this weird metal stuff. Mm-hmm. And what causes him to do that is Goro's about to kill his wife. He stops that and just slices the hell out of the guy. Jams blades through his eyes, I think, in the ultimate thing and kills him.
R.I.P.
So now everybody's got Arcana except for Jax, who just has robot arms, but he's about to get those too because he comes back to consciousness after getting thrown and knocked out by Reiko. I don't know why, you know, they didn't finish these people off, but they didn't. And he's right next to Sonya, who is trapped under a rock. He tries to lift the rock off her and has a moment of, I don't know, his arms get gigantic, and he successfully does that, and now he's Jax from the video game.
I will say, like, powers like the ones that Jax and Kung Lao have are so strange to me because it's like a prop power, right? Where it's like, you can't, like, shoot fireballs or anything. It's like, you just have more buff metal arms. And in Kung Lao's case, it's like, you can just throw your hat really good. Like,
that is true. Yeah, this is one thing. I think you're a lot better off making a movie like this about a video game series when there's just one game than when there are like 11 or whatever, because, you know, you're looking at the last 20 years of these developers trying to come up with mildly different ways to play the video game or whatever, you know, like, so you have all of those innovations. This movie is full of characters that we don't know a damn thing about, except that they appear in the games. And I think, like, if you had a smaller group of fighters and on either side, as they did making the first movie, you know, you don't have quite as much exposition. You got to dump about who these people are.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, it seems like some people got a bad deal with the their secret powers.
Yeah.
Jax in particular, it's like, just redesign the arms, dude. Like, you don't have to.
Right. Like, that's not something you had to find a secret power to get. Like, you just go to someone and be like, can you please make these arms better? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's achievable.
Show them some of the stills from the earlier scenes where you have pictures of what the arms are supposed to look like. Go back to the original model.
Yeah, just go in and say, have you seen the Winter Soldier? Just do that for me, please.
All right, so let's put this conversation on hold for a second and hear from our sponsors.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
And now back to Mortal Kombat. Round two.
But the arms are strong, at least, because he just ruins... It is still Reiko, right?
It is. But before he does that, like, after he lifts the rock, we got to get to Kung Lao, right? After his flawless victory, pretty much immediately gets killed by Shang Tsung. Like, just...
Yeah. It's a good death, though.
Yeah, he eats his soul. I think it's one of the fatalities.
Your soul is mine.
Yeah.
I love that shit. It's so good.
So Liu Kang tries to save him, fails, and Raiden warps everybody away before Shang Tsung can finish the battle. So at this point, the surviving fighters are in the void, courtesy of Raiden, which is an area where Shang Tsung can't follow, and I'm not sure why they weren't training there, but they weren't. So,
Good point.
Yeah, no, exactly. And here, Raiden gives Cole his ancestor Hanzo's weapon, which is a garden trowel that he improvises into... what is it called? A kunai or whatever. during his original fight. You know, Scorpion has that trademark thing he shoots out of his hand. And
it's cool.
Yeah, and that's what that is. But anyway, but the important thing is now Cole has that item. And then they come up with a plan, which is these guys don't want to have a tournament. They're trying to stop this they're trying to kill everyone before the tournament can happen. They set up sort of their own tournament, although it does not seem to be like the official Determine the Fate of Earth Realm tournament.
Yeah, only in so much as like, let's not die before the tournament.
Yeah, no, exactly. So essentially, Raiden uses his ability to teleport anybody to teleport pairs of characters into Mortal Kombat levels, basically, where they can do one-on-one fights like in the game. So we get our final matchups here, and that is Sonya versus Kano back at Sonya's place, and they have a fight, sort of a you call it almost a prop fight, I guess. It's one of those fights where they are using the environment in every hit.
Yeah, it's a pretty good fight because they're basically just ruining her trailer and everything inside and outside of it as they just try to kill each other.
Yeah. Lots of laser blasts.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he gets her in a chokehold outside in the garden, and she manages to kill him by getting her hands on this garden gnome that... In an earlier scene, Kano had like just sort of disgustingly spat upon, and you get to see his spit dripping off of the thing, and stabs it through his eye. So Sonya wins, fatality. She gets the dragon mark.
And she gets laser arms.
Oh, well, she gets the dragon birthmark or whatever on her shoulder.
Yeah.
And then later when she describes, she gets those like power rings or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's one fight. The other one is Jax and Ryko fight in somewhere in Outworld, and Jax wins with a fatality. Jax uses his robot arms to clap together over Ryko's head and smashes it into, you know, oblivion.
One of the grosser moments of the
movie. Exactly. Well, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, you're dealing with a video game that's like using, you know, whatever, 16-bit graphics to do the grossest things that they can imagine to get, you know, teenagers like me to keep pumping in quarters. And that's not really an aesthetic that translates too much when you're trying to do like photorealistic CGI. Like the thing I mean, in the original Mortal Kombat, if you did one of the things where you got to reduce somebody to a skeleton, like, or there are a bunch of fatalities where basically bones would go flying everywhere, and they're all femurs. Yeah. They're all like leg bones. And then there's like a rib cage as one entire piece because they didn't have the graphics. And like, you can get away with a lot more gore with that one than you can if you're actually trying to say, well, what happens to the human skull and titanium impacts of that?
When you just clap it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it could have, you know, I don't mean, it's not a gore fest exactly. It's not.
Not as gory as you think a Mortal Kombat movie would be, I would say.
Yeah, there's not a lot of body horror or stuff where you're just like, oh no, it's just a lot of sort of, you know, painless.
It's like a 2-second kill.
Blood flying everywhere. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So, and then the other fight is Melina is fighting Cole and is about to kill him, but then Sonya gets teleported back and discovers her arcana, which are these energy rings she can shoot from her arms, which...
Pretty good power.
It is. Yeah, it is. So she does that to Melina and, you know, rips away most of her torso and that like leaves a giant hole in her chest that you can see through. See her spine through, I think, which is also something from the game.
That's what I was wondering about, where it was like, so is the idea that it would only dissolve flesh but not bone? Because there's the hole and then just the spine going through.
My understanding, I mean, I don't have a deep understanding of it, but I have seen that image of the hole with the spine still visible in some compilation of Mortal Kombat fatalities or wherever, but it's not Sonya's. In the video game, her fatalities are all like military stuff. Like she summons a drone that shoots you in the head a million times or whatever. Well, actually, in the original game, her fatality is like she blows kisses that, like, then turn into fireball things that kill
people. Wow, good for her. That's great.
Yeah, exactly. But in this one, she gets the... I mean, she has those energy beams, but they're just like a regular move. They're not like her big secret move. So I think they were awkwardly combining a character with a fatality who wasn't hers without really thinking through the actual what effect do energy rings have on human vertebrae thing, you know.
Yeah.
And more research is needed, basically, I think, before they did that.
Citation needed. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they've had these one-on-one matches, and now they decide that they all want to team up to take on Sub-Zero because he's the strongest one and the biggest threat to all of them.
Yes. But they don't get to do that because Sub-Zero sets up his own terms, basically. Sub-Zero goes to Cole's house and does we don't know what to his wife and daughter. We see Sub-Zero arrive, but then he shows up where Cole is with his a strength bracelet that his daughter had made for him. Mm-hmm. And Cole, infuriated, follows him and gets warped off without anybody else. And where they end up is Cole's gym from the original fight, but now it's frozen. So mm-hmm. Sub-Zero almost kills Cole in this fight in this ice realm. And then Cole stabs him with Hanzo's blade, which still has Hanzo's blade on it. Right?
This is the best scene in the movie. This is
absolutely the best scene in the
movie. It's so good.
Yeah, and when he does that... Oh, and wait, I should add that throughout this movie, Cole, anytime he looks in the mirror, has been having visions of Hanzo in hell, mm-hmm. you know, yelling like, avenge me, whatever.
Also awesome.
Yeah, real Hamlet. Real Hamlet shit.
We forgot to mention that we also do see the Fallout 3 man get killed.
Oh, yes.
By Liu Kang.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Liu Kang does both his, like, flying kick and his... dragon fire fatality dragon. Thing or whatever. And
pretty cool.
Yeah, that is the end of him. But
not as cool as
this. As soon as Cole hits Sub-Zero with Hanzo's blade, Scorpion arrives. Or I should say Hanzo arrives or whatever. But at this point he is Scorpion because he spent the last, mm-hmm. you know, 400 years in hell. And then we get like the fight of the game, which is Scorpion fighting Sub-Zero.
Yeah. It's such a good moment because we've discussed the Mortal Kombat theme a little bit, but it's really such an iconic song. Like, I think everybody knows it, even if you haven't played the video games. And this is the one scene in which they actually use it. And it's to such good effect because it's right before/ as you're seeing Scorpion that you're like, bump, bump, bump,
yeah, exactly.
bump, bump. And you're like, here it comes. Because yeah, you know exactly what's happening.
But they don't have the guy yelling Mortal Kombat. Catchphrase. I was very disappointed in that.
They don't, yeah.
But
at least Scorpion yells, get over here.
Yeah.
And then just flings
you gotta have that.
Sub-Zero over.
You gotta have that.
It's so good.
Yeah. So this is the game where this is the fight where they pack in as many animations from the game as possible. Like Sub-Zero does all mm-hmm. his best moves. Like he does the ice sword. He does a wall of icicles. He does the thing where he leaves an ice statue of himself that then the person is supposed to slam into and get killed. But none of it works. Scorpion.
I didn't know those were all game things. They're all pretty cool.
Yeah. Most of them I think are from fatalities, not like typical moves. I know that the one where you set up a wall of ice and then impale the person on it is one of mm-hmm. the game enders. But they don't work in this case because Scorpion's been dead for a long time.
As Scorpion says, I have risen from hell to kill you, which is the coolest line ever.
It is a very good entrance line. I'm going to adapt it myself, I think.
Also, like, Hiroyuki Sanada is, like, totally committed to it.
Yes.
He is a legendary actor. He's so cool. Yeah. And he's also giving it 10,000% as Scorpion, which makes this, like, really elevates this movie in my mind.
I don't know if I go so far as elevates. I'd say it maintains its hover or something.
Okay, fair.
But yeah, no, absolutely. He's great in this. This fight is great. The best choreographed one, the most interesting mm-hmm. one, because it has, I would say like half of the trailer is taken from this sequence. The thing with Scorpion making a sword and a dagger out of ice. The thing where he makes a dagger out
and
of
blood.
Scorpion's own blood and stabs him with it.
So cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff. But it doesn't work. Cole joins.
I'm going to get emails after this being like, you said that's so cool too much. Are you aware of this?
it's
worth it for
yeah,
this.
No, some things are so cool that you can only express their coolness by repeating that they're so cool again and again. I would say that this movie is, yeah, like very much constructed to make you say, that is so cool. mm-hmm. So it seems like it's
worth. I will say, yeah, when Scorpion showed up and the Mortal Kombat theme kicked in, I did jump up from my seat and yell, yes, and start laughing because I was so happy.
Yeah, no, it's an iconic moment. Summoning the spirit of Sir Goonie Golf in the 1990s. So Scorpion kills Sub-Zero.
He says, you thought like I would die in hell, in the fires of hell, but instead I learned to control them. And he takes his mask off and then just breathes fire at Sub-Zero and just scorches him.
And I'm going to say this for the 90th time. That is also a thing from the video games they put in there. That's one of his fatalities.
I guess we should mention this whole time, Sub-Zero has basically frozen Cole's wife and daughter in a similar way to what he did to Hanzo's wife and child. And Cole spends most of the fight, most of the time while Scorpion and Sub-Zero are fighting, he's just trying to punch the ice away from his family, which is one of the weirder asides in this movie.
Yeah, I don't know what he's trying to do, and I don't know why he thinks it would work. And I don't know how they're still alive. I mean, I
thought they were dead. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's poor craftsmanship by Sub-Zero. Like, he killed Hanzo's family without too much trouble. He made a little pietà, but in this case, he somehow has not killed them. He's just is keeping them prisoner. I don't know. Maybe the thought is that if they're still alive, he will go, and if they're not, he won't. I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't make any sense, but there's a lot of very silly shots of Cole just punching a wall of ice to no visible effect. But once Sub-Zero is dead, Scorpion goes back to hell or wherever he is, and Cole and his family reunite, and somehow the gym thaws without any explanation.
Yeah, it's a very much a, like, the curse is lifted kind of thing. Where it's like the witch is dead, and all that stuff.
Right after Sub-Zero dies, Shang Tsung shows up in the gym. Well, Raiden, Sonya, and Liu Kang show up via lightning, and they're all celebrating that Sub-Zero is dead. Then Shang Tsung arrives and says death is only a portal, and that the next time he'll bring armies instead of fighters. And Raiden's like, you'll go back to Outworld, dude, and zaps him away. But then Raiden says that they have to make a sequel. They have to find a new list of champions. And then we somehow cut to the gym, which has thawed without damaging anything. And Cole tells the guy who was paying
him. No freezer burn anywhere.
Yeah, nothing. It's just, it's clean. They had a, you know, they hired a deep cleaning team or whatever. Without anybody knowing, because the guy who sets up fights in his gym doesn't seem to know that the fate of Earthrealm was just decided there.
Yeah.
And he tells the guy that he's quit fighting. He's not going to take $200 to lose fights anymore. And he's going to Hollywood. And as he leaves, we see a poster for a movie called Citizen Cage, starring the only character from the original Mortal Kombat, not in the movie, Johnny Cage. And so apparently he's going to assemble another team and ask us for another $15 or month's worth of HBO Max to find out what happens.
I mean, I'll happily pay that for another Mortal Kombat movie if it's like this one.
I will happily continue subscribing to HBO Max for their other fine programming and put this on one night when I'm high.
Who would you wish that they would cast as Johnny Cage?
Well, it's sort of the thing where the fantasy casting is just, I mean, Johnny Cage, I think, was supposed to be Van Damme, I think. Was the model for the first one? I'm not sure. But like in the movies, they sort of have modeled him after Tom Cruise. I would say either one of those guys would be fine 20 years ago. For now, I don't know. I don't know who you'd cast. You need somebody who has kind of like a movie star. Well, at least listen to me talking about like the essence of Johnny Cage. You need somebody who looks like 16-bit video graphics and wears sunglasses. That's all you really need. I don't know. What about you? Do you have a fantasy cast for Johnny Cage?
I feel... Channing Tatum, I feel, could do
it. Oh, he'd be great.
I was thinking about Jimmy Tatro from American Vandal, the first season.
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
He has made most of his career out of playing charming meatheads, so.
That would work, yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Like, it's kind of weird. I don't know. It was nice to see that thing or whatever, but again, this is just another movie that's a trailer for the movie that follows it, sort of. And that, I wasn't crazy about that.
Yeah, I don't love that aspect, but everything apart from that was like just good enough for me to be like, yeah, that's pretty good, and then text my friends about it, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. I would say if you enjoyed this, you should check out the first one. It's terrible. I mean, it's a terrible movie, but it's but it is... very fun, and it's kind of interesting to compare them because I think they did a really smart thing with this, which is that they do not spend a whole lot of time trying to make you believe any of the mythology around it, like they because it just doesn't stand up to it. And the same thing is true with the other one. There's less to do, so they just don't make any real pretense of you know, coherence or some kind of structured backstory, because there really isn't one. And this one, they have more of that to do. But I was thinking about this in terms of like, did you see Godzilla versus Kong?
Yeah, I just watched it, actually.
Ah, okay. Well, so that one, right? You've also got like all this crazy backstory from the King Kong movies and the Godzilla movies and all of that stuff that they're working into it. But I think they took sort of a different approach there, which is they really try to explain all of this stuff that doesn't make any sense at all. Like, that movie is just one nonsensical explanation for what Godzilla and Kong are up to after another. And in this one, they're just like, oh yeah, ancient cultures, ancient, you know, whatever. Long-running myth.
Who cares?
Earth realm is in chaos. Like, we'll just start with this, but we're not going to make you believe in genetic memory or anything.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
I think that's like, you got to keep in your head what kind of movie you're making. And if it's a ridiculous movie, just lean into that. And these guys did, I thought.
Yeah, it does a very, very good job of that, which I think is why it's successful. Like, I think of the summer, quote unquote, summer blockbusters that we've had, like Godzilla versus Kong, Mortal Kombat, and also to a certain degree, Monster Hunter. Like, I think this one is the most successful out of the three.
I would buy that. Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, I think it's, I haven't seen Monster Hunter, so I can't speak to that, but it's definitely, I thought, a better movie than Kong vs. Godzilla, just because it's not trying to be a very good movie, and Kong vs. Godzilla occasionally is, and it doesn't work out for them, you know? Like, this is the movie where you want to see Scorpion yell, "Get over here," and that's, you do that.
It completely delivers.
That's what you got to do, and that's it. I
like it. One of the things that I sort of liked about this, which will sound extremely silly when I say it out loud, is that it was nice to see, like, so many actors of Asian descent, like, put in main roles in a movie that isn't, like, weird. This is a movie about the Asian experience. Like, it's not Crazy Rich Asians or The Farewell or Minari or anything like that. And the idea that a movie doesn't have to be anymore in order to have a more diverse cast was kind of heartening to me. Like, it's incredible to me that Hiroyuki Sanada and Tadanobu Asano are in this movie, because they're huge. They're legendary Japanese actors. And it's just fun to see them. And, like, Chin Han, Joe Taslim, Louis Tan, they're all great. Ludi Lin. And now I'm just trying to name everybody so I don't leave anyone out. But you get my point.
It was a good cast of fighters or stunt people or actors. I mean, all of it. Like, I was... I thought it was a pretty good cast. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, how good a cast do you need? There is something to be said for just casting whatever B-movie star you can... I mean, the 90s approach is not... There's no... not a lot of racial representation in that.
Yeah. Also, a cool secondary cast, like some of the people that we don't get to see front and center, both Damon Harriman and Angus Sampson, very good Australian character actors, do voices in the movie, which is quite fun. I like both of them a lot.
Oh, wow. Which voices?
Damon Harriman is Cabal, the Fallout guy, right. And Angus Sampson is Goro.
Got it. Cabal is one of the ones where, of course, the less they tell you about him, the better, because he somehow has this, like, he's got like a New York accent and knows... Kano?
He does not make sense.
I don't know. He's going to need a whole prequel movie, I think. Which I'm sure
let's not go that far. I wouldn't watch that.
You can't stop Warner Brothers, man. They're going to do it.
That's true. All right. I think that is all the spoiling that we have to do for Mortal Kombat. So that's our show. This is so fun. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking about it with you.
Please subscribe to the Slate Spoiler Special podcast feed. And if you like the show, please rate and review it in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have suggestions for movies or TV shows we should spoil, or if you have any other feedback you'd like to share, please send it to spoilers@slate.com. Our producer is Morgan Flannery. For Matt Desim, I'm Karen Hahn. Thank you for listening.
Flawless victory.
Hell yeah.
3 Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.